Today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast is brought to you by DB. DB is a Scandinavian brand that makes backpacks and bags to help people on the move stay ready for anything. From the streets to the peaks, DB's gear is travel tested by some of the world's best athletes, adventurers, and creators. Over the past decade, DB has designed and developed, released, and refined the best bags in the market. With DB's patented hookup system, you are able to attach smaller products to your backpack, roller, or tote. We are teaming up with DB to exclusively offer our listeners 10% off your next purchase by using the code POD10 or going to our link in the show notes. DB, it's time to move on, time to get going. This is the Outlap F1 Podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna, your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap! Welcome to Season 3, Episode 33, I think I got it right this time, of the Outlap F1 Podcast. This is our Nashville IndyCar reaction episode. You've got Andy, I'm along with John and Deanna. James has, I think, had enough of airports for the last couple of days from what the weird weather and trying to get his wife out of an airport. Deanna's had enough of airports for the last, I think, the next month. So I think we're just going to go with what we've got tonight. So John, Deanna, it's good to see you again. It's been a while, only a few days, but, how are we doing?
36 hours, something like that. It was good. Yeah. Weekend full of, travel issues. Obviously James and his wife had their own. Deanna, you've been around the country and back, to New York. My 8-hour trip to Nashville took about 12 due to two interstate shutdowns. But hell of a weekend. It was awfully, you know, great to see you guys and finally meet Deanna in person, which was a pretty cool experience. And Nashville was awesome. First time I had ever been there. Definitely didn't disappoint. Would like to go back, you know, maybe on a non-race weekend at some point. Definitely maybe go back next year for this race as well. It was an awesome weekend, but I think we're all still recovering. Still a little sunburned. Definitely dehydrated as well, so.
Yeah, I don't think I've stopped sweating from that day. I don't know what it's like to be cold anymore. But yeah, it was an awesome weekend, but I'll never fly Spirit Airways ever again, or Spirit, whatever it is.
That's a Spirit. In all fairness, we did try to warn her about this, but so, you know, hopefully you're not flying Spirit at, you know, said other race coming up.
Nope. I'm only flying major airlines from now on. I have learned my lesson.
Yes, seat assignment and all that stuff is probably the way to go. So, I mean, we don't really have too much on our little truncated show document tonight, but one of the things we did want to talk about was kind of our reaction to our Nashville weekend. Hot, very, very hot. We also kind of wandered the desert of the paddock and everywhere else trying to find our seats. But once we did, once we eventually found them and got settled, I thought it was a heck of a show, to be honest with you. What did you guys think?
Yeah, man, we got the grand tour of the Nissan Stadium where the Titans play. We saw the GT America paddock. We saw the Stadium Super Truck paddock. We saw all those again. It only took us an hour to find our seats. So yeah. that was really, honestly, my, you know, cautions aside, that was really my only gripe was, you know, just trying to navigate the closed off streets and figure out which pedestrian bridge would take you where. And apparently we thought we were supposed to go over a bridge. We're actually supposed to go under a bridge. Signage wasn't the best. Yeah. The bridge, the main bridge of the freaking track.
Didn't make that one clear.
But outside of that, yeah, I mean, I personally really enjoyed the race. We can get into a little bit of it, but sitting there in turn 9, which was, I guess, turn 1 at the start of the race, which is a little bit interesting. You know, we were at the long straight at the second time across the bridge as they're coming kind of back into the city. It made for some amazing overtakes. And then we were all really surprised that there was no carnage at the beginning of the race, especially on the Indy side of things, because we'd sat there for 5 hours before that in the baking sun and seen absolute mayhem in GT America and stadium trucks. So,
yeah. Here's the panel of experts, you know, sitting behind a bunch of, there were a lot of first time fans right in front of us. And we're all saying, you know, there's no way IndyCar's going to get through this, you know, especially after the stadium super truck race where we saw three go into one, didn't work and take each other out. We saw the sports car race which had two really significant wrecks right in front of us. One so much so that it moved the barrier back that they had to get out.
And ripped off two tires in the process.
Tires that went flying all over the place. So, you know, catch fence and all that did its all job, but we figured there's no way IndyCar's going to get through that corner on the first lap, right? Well, of course they do. And then all the carnage happened right after that. So, goes to show what we know.
Yeah, I think just kind of, the event as a whole, I think, was an overwhelming success. I think the environment there, the people there, attending that race, it was the best time. Maybe the racing itself was the best, and we can kind of get into later changes, potential changes that they could make in the future. I do think they will probably make quite a few after this. First time event, always going to have some hiccups. So, and like we kind of talked about earlier, walk around everywhere, lack of signage is one of those major issues.
Yeah.
But yeah. Also, my other little gripe here is, you should not have a race. Races should be banned in the months of July and August in the southern United States. It's a little too hot. But we could maybe resolve that with a night race if they could figure that one out. And I think I saw a few people mention that, but that would be my ideal.
I mean, we got dang close to one at the end of that thing. It ended up turning out, and we ended up seeing some stuff that you never see like on camera, like. For one of the things, it was dark enough that where you could like see the LED boards on the IndyCar steering wheels, which is something that I'd never actually been able to see before, you know, in full like lit up like that. But in terms of the facility, there were, I think, two main complaints that I've heard about even since coming back. One was, and this was definitely true, if you weren't able to buy it, you had a hard time finding any water. And with temperatures in the mid-90s and literally the ground as hot as it was, I still have a blister on one of my feet that is still in a little bit of recovery mode to this, even tonight. That was a problem. The other one was lack of signage anywhere. I mean, if you were close to your grandstand and you were within range of it, yeah, there was a sign that sort of helped you. But if you weren't anywhere near your grandstand, you were basically on your own, and the map. Somebody got to go to map school and tell people how to get in and out of places. That's super helpful. Just a couple of arrows, like here's an egress area.
Or a line that shows that there's a barrier that you cannot walk to another section.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're relatively smart people. We could see the big grandstand over there. There just was no way to get to it. We literally ended up behind the gas station on the wrong side of the track, unable to get to where we wanted to go. And the way that they ended up funneling you is so weird. We had to go basically through everything and around and under the bridge.
Yeah, if you look at the track map, I mean, again, we're semi-intelligent people. I've been to a lot of races. I think, you know, I have a pretty good idea to navigate a racetrack, even though it's an interesting one like this. But, yeah, I mean, it looked pretty clear that you would hop over one pedestrian bridge. You'd be on the, you know, inside the track where all the paddock, you know, stuff was. And then it was clear as day, another pedestrian bridge right on the other side. And our grandstand was right there, you know, easy peasy, no problem. But yeah, you get over there and that's completely blocked off. It's like a highway over there, something that you're definitely not, you couldn't get around if you tried to. So, I mean, you know, it's bad when, again, four semi-intelligent people have to come up to, and thankfully this very nice woman helped us, but pulled out basically the equivalent of like a world map, you know, in like extremely high detailed, you know, 2x2x2 whatever size piece of paper to try to pinpoint how to actually get to our seats. It shouldn't be that difficult, but yeah, I mean, that aside, the racing, going back to that, I thought it was fun. I mean, it probably the most caution laps that I've ever seen. I think we lost count. Was it nine cautions and red flags?
Nine cautions, two red flags. I think it was 33 laps under 33 caution, miles. Nine penalties, two disqualifications. I think that's about
it. And a partridge and a pear tree.
Yeah. And a leaking porta potty slash hospitality tent slash
hospitality unit that decided to have some sort of an accident in the middle of one of the caution flags. And nobody could figure out where the water was coming from. And that doesn't surprise me because it was so dang hot. So I will share Deanna's take. Mid-August, fun time to be down there. Probably not probably the best time to go racing.
Yeah, if we can make that a night race, which we found out after the fact that GT America, of course, they have headlights, so that made a very different story. But GT America apparently ran their first race at night on this course before or the night before. I wish we would have seen that. I didn't realize that was going to be the case. You know, hopefully we make it back next year. I'll definitely find a way to get down there and see that. And you go. But if you can make an IndyCar race live in that streets, that would be incredible because Nashville actually has a really cool skyline. The bridge is pretty cool. They got the river
it
there.
It lights up very nicely at night.
Yeah, I was very impressed. Not what I expected, honestly. So I'm not sure what I expected, but it was definitely impressed me. And I think, if you get an IndyCar race at night there with the brakes glowing and everything else associated with it, I mean, that would be an absolute standout event. And from a TV standpoint, like I said, I think we had the best seats in the house. The TV, the camera angle that we were just talking about before the show tonight, camera angle from where we were sitting did not do justice.
No, it didn't. That camera.
If you look at if you watch the race on TV, it looks like a very wide, broad, sweeping turn. That's absolutely not the case whatsoever. It's pretty much a straight 90-degree turn with barriers on both sides that are not giving whatsoever. That you would have never caught that from the TV, viewing angle. But yeah, I mean, obviously they had the second highest rating in 20 something years or whatever.
23 years.
Yeah, for Indy, which is absolutely incredible to see the growth there.
Well, I actually think it was not that I ever liked to compliment NBC for everything, for anything, but they actually did a smart thing and they piggybacked it right off the NASCAR race.
Yeah.
So here was kind of our gimmick. Hey, if you like this, try this. So they probably had a lot of crossover just sticking with it. Then you get all the chaos that ended up ensuing. And that probably kept people simply because, they could, get their friends or whoever and text, threads could get going. The fact that it lasted, I was shocked that they didn't pull out a timer. I mean, how they got it in before dark was actually a bit of a miracle at the end. But, just all of that kind of led, I think, to a good TV viewing experience. I mean, heck, I was texting back and forth with my family who doesn't watch any of this stuff.
Right.
And they're texting me saying, oh my God, this race is crazy.
This is the kind of race where casual, random people that show up will enjoy, whereas hardcore kind of racing fans typically don't. Because it's not necessarily the greatest racing, but it is, I heard somebody saying, kind of like Demolition Derby, like that kind of thing. Like it is very much just kind of wreck, caution, all of this kind of stuff. It just seems like pure chaos, and that definitely does retain the average viewer, a random viewer that just happens to stumble across it that is not necessarily an Indy fan. But as far as the cautions go, I will have to say I think there's a couple improvements there. Two being not as long. There were some that just kind of dragged on for a few more laps, and you're like, why? Because somebody just stalled and they kept going, and we're still under caution for like two more laps. And then the other one is they should probably completely move the start finish straight over to the entrance into turn 9 because it's just too tight, kind of going in through 1 and 2 and then on that straight into the quote unquote castle section like 4-8. I think they having that room into turn 9 I think helped them sort themselves out. So
you have a much better shot at a cleaner restart because that was where we had a lot of carnage. I mean, that's where we saw Erickson, the eventual race winner. By the way, we haven't even mentioned who won the dang thing. Go airborne and end up winning the thing at the end because of that weird restart rule where, if you're, three corners back and you're in like P19, P20 and they say green, you go. And you're in basically a slow zone. There's no hope for you if everybody else doesn't go with you.
Yeah.
So,
but
yeah,
I guess
definitely the first time in my life I've seen a car go airborne and come back and win a race.
Probably
the last time either.
And from our vantage point, he looked like I thought he was done. And then all of a sudden, it cycled back. He got a penalty, and because of all the other yellow, he ends up cycling back. And the next thing I know, there's the 8 car in like third place. I go, how the hell did that happen?
And I mean, because he dragged that wing around for pretty much the entire lap.
Yes.
He did it right on the start finish straight. But I think Yeah, because he pitted so early because he took that stop going like lap 12. And so that was the massive benefit to him. And then having all of those cautions, being able to extend the fuel at the end. But I mean, overall, I think had Herta is a separate issue that we can get to in a second, but kind of a mistake from Ericsson running into the back of Bourdais. But I think after that, really impressive after serving that stop go and to filter back up and constantly managing fuel. And they made a really great setup choice with running in lower downforce. So he was able to pull away on the straights and hold on to that lead. So he did some impressive work holding on to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we get into Herta, I mean, one of the things, if you haven't watched, definitely go check out Deanna's relapped from Indy. One of my favorite parts, obviously, being at the race and, you know, then back and rewatching it, your video today was, I don't remember who it was who stalled, but did the whole 3-point turn. It was just one of these things back and forth. And the whole crowd, you know, like 100,000 people are like, you can do it! You can do it!
That was, I think,
we're just praying to God that there's no caution. It was just like,
that was caution number 8. And I think at that point, everybody's like, please, just let this
You're like, please, God, just keep going. I mean,
it was literally, you're all, the whole section did this. Like, they were all encouraging him. And then the yellow comes out and we just all yelled, fuck! At the same time. Because it was like, oh, God. And then just that one lasted like 6 laps.
But I did want to say, just the crowd in general, too, there in Nashville. Everybody seemed super into it, whether they knew exactly what was going on or not. And it was just like a fun environment and energy around to be able to watch this. And I think that really kind of elevated the experience for this one.
Yeah, I mean,
I was making friends with a couple of groups in front of us and talking us up and trying to get them, you know, hopefully if they are listening, hey, shout out to you. It was nice to meet you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, to me, that's just the fun of it for me is whenever you get a chance to talk racing with people that you don't always necessarily get to talk racing with. And you're probably never going to, unfortunately, we're probably never going to see those people ever again. Maybe. Yeah, that's true. Maybe we get a converted one or two. another opportunity.
The crowd vibe was definitely different than, and I will say it's true, like of all the IndyCar races I've ever been to, there definitely is a different vibe than like an F1 race.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock. Like it's usually like a lot of fun. You know, you've got some people that are diehard, but I feel like most people that are there, you know, just wanted to, it was an opportunity, probably live somewhere in Tennessee around there. It was like, hey, let's take the family out. Let's go see it. It'd be a fun event kind of thing. And yeah, they just kind of enjoyed it for what it was of the pure chaos that ensued. So yeah, it was like, it was just an entertaining event despite the literally almost half of it being ran under caution. Yeah. I mean, going back to the Herta situation, I mean, I guess never really been a Herta fan, but I guess I kind of am now. I mean, I was thoroughly cheering for him, hoping to have the comeback. That's the other thing with all the cautions. I mean, sitting in the stands, Indiana, I know you've probably gone back and watched this thing 3 or 4 times now. I've rewatched it once on TV as well, but just trying to figure out who's on what strategy, you know, who's on what fuel, where's the last time they're on fuel. I know my neighbor, it was obviously somewhat difficult to hear the TV broadcast. Thankfully, we had an enormous TV, you know, Jumbotron that Deanna couldn't remember what it was called, right in front of us. So we obviously got, you know, some great views of the rest of the track, but, you know, my neighbor was texting me and live during the race and was saying, like, they're telling Ericsson to save fuel, don't use push to pass because, you know, may not have enough fuel to use. Like, that was some of the things, obviously, you miss out a little bit on being at the race, but it was still interesting to see just how many different strategies, you know, were going on because of the caution. Every 5 laps we were under caution.
And every time another yellow would come out, somebody else's strategy got turned up on its head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everyone kind of would say, well, maybe we think this is the last one, so let's roll the dice. Let's do the pit stop. Like, I mean, that's, I think, what screwed Alex Rossi was, you know, he was looking pretty good. And then
Pato screwed Rossi.
And that too. That too.
Because I mean, think they were in a pretty good spot, the pair of them, because they were kind of near Herta because they came in on lap 45 too. But then, on that restart, it didn't go very well.
Yeah, and then when Pato makes the dive bomb and Rossi gets punted, I mean, that's
if they were smarter, they would have worked together to work their way through the field and then battle it out later. But, you know, it's just we should have known at the start of that race that, you know, something was going to happen. I mean, at one point it looked like Pato was going to make a massive chunk in the championship. And then when it all said and done, now he's
and somehow Alex Palou, who was for most of the race in like 17th.
Yeah. Ends having up a terrible day.
Ninth or eighth or something. And extends his point lead. So,
yeah,
I mean, it was just, it was craziness. And it was every time, like I said, the yellow would come out, somebody else's strategy would just get kicked to the curb. And it was, well, forget that, you know, race sheet. Let's try something else. Let's see what sticks. And it worked. And that's basically how it worked for Ericsson. And what he was able to do was, Deanna, you referenced the low downforce setup. Was he was basically able to get a gap going back onto, as they were coming towards us, the second half of the bridge. And Herta just couldn't get, bridge that gap enough, even though he sure as hell damn tried.
Yeah.
The move on Dixon, where his tires are screeching and we could see him glowing. TV did not do that move justice. They showed it from like coming at you. To see it, you could hear it. That was the amazing part, was you could hear it before you even saw it. Like, you knew someone was coming in hot, and then it's a 26, and then you saw his brakes. And I'm like, oh my God, his brakes are going to melt. And it was what four laps later that he kind of tried it again. Again, he was trying to bridge the gap. We could hear the collision with the tire barrier much more than we could see it, because it was just as they were going out of our field of vision. But oh my God, he took a hell of a lick.
Yeah. I mean, the overtake that you mentioned, that was one of the best I've seen in my life, especially live. That was absolutely incredible. Like you said, you knew, you could sense it brewing. We could kind of see what was going on in the broadcast, and then, you know, trying to matching that up with the sound, like you said, him coming in hot, everything glowing, everything squealing, brake smells. It was just a glorious experience if you're a motorsports fan, just to have all the senses just, you know, glowing all right there in your face. But yeah, I think, you know, Ericsson certainly just continued to frustrate him lap after lap. And then obviously he had that enormous lockup, which we don't even know how he made. I don't know how he made the corner on that particular lockup.
Right.
Because that was insane.
Yeah.
And then, then he started losing a little bit of distance. He lost some ground there and was obviously pushing as hard as he possibly could. It's frustrating when you dominated an entire weekend, you know, in qualifying, we didn't even talk about that. Obviously, he was on alternate tires, so we expect him to be fast. But, you know, he's 1.2 seconds up on the field on the last run. And then we all thought,
That's Lewis Hamilton in 2014 range, right?
Yeah, We all think in our heads, okay, he was the only one on that tire, you know, his brand new tire, yada, yada. That explains it. You know, it's all going to even out in the field. But then, no, restart after restart after restart after restart after restart. I'm losing count here of how many we've had, because there was so many. He just continued to pull. I mean, by the time they got over to us, he was already 3 seconds up on, you know, Rossi at the time. So to have you dominate that much of the weekend and then through strategy get lost, get shuffled back, find your way up to P2, and then just to see this car, the car in front of you, just continue to pull away from you lap after lap at the same spot. You catch back up, and then he pulls on you again. I know it had to be frustrating, and obviously end up, you know, putting in the fence at the very end there. But I mean, it was a hell of a drive for the kid. Someone needs to give the guy an F1 test. Let's see what they can do.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I mean, and he just did pretty much all of the overtaking on the day and was getting them done in places you didn't think that they could be done. He had two in turn eight, which were, I mean, we didn't see them. I didn't notice them when we were there, but seeing them again on the broadcast, that were crazy impressive. And then again, that one over Dixon was the most impressive thing we saw all day. And it was just such, until that last, like, probably starting from the lockup is when things started to go downhill for him. But until that point, there was nobody that could get remotely close to him. And I mean, had he, like, imagine if we had had green the whole way through, he would have been way out gone.
Oh, he could have lapped the field up to P8 or P9.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
he
would have been that absolute domination. You mentioned like the turn eights and the quote unquote castle section that reminds us all of Baku. To see how he was coming through there lap after lap, and there's obviously that huge bump right there. And literally, I mean, lap after lap, he's basically getting air because he's pushing that hard through that section, pure confidence, without any doubt in his mind, lap after lap, that he was going to stick that corner full on the throttle, hopping over a bump, going airborne. I mean, it was pretty incredible. And then to see, you know, I know I saw back today, like Scott McLaughlin's catch that he had. I don't know who he was ever taking, but that was incredible.
I see him coming over the bridge
in a full lock, completely sideways at 180 miles an hour. I mean, it's just glorious sights to see. So yeah, I'll definitely be back. I look forward to a couple tweaks. I know pit road obviously needs to be tweaked a little bit. You shouldn't be able to come in and take a pit stop and then pretty much still maintain your lead under caution. That shouldn't be feasible to do when, you know, most of the field isn't pitting. That's obviously something that needs to be tweaked. I agree with you. I think the start line, the start finish should just remain there where we were. That would make a hell of a lot more sense. But other than that, I mean, any other tweaks that you guys could think of off the top of your head?
If they could make that, like that castle section eight, I don't know how you do it, but if you can make it a bit wider, maybe not quite as bumpy, you could repave that. You're not going to repave that bridge because that you shouldn't even touch. I didn't think the bridge led to any super drama other than the fact that, you know, that was kind of the lead up to where all the twisty bits were. But it was
unless
fun
your name
to watch
is Jimmy Johnson, because I mean, him and that bridge were not friends this week.
No. I mean, I know he's brought in a lot of money to that team, but he sure spent a bunch because he wrecked both his chassis and Palou's backup chassis in the same race.
That's why I didn't realize he was in Palou's backup, because and that's why I was getting so confused and I had no idea who was who half the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he had his own front wing with the 48. But he had the NTT data because it's Palou's backup chassis because he wrecked both of his cars.
We're joking the whole morning, and then sure enough, on the warm up, he puts it in the wall, and it's just like, I don't know. I guess that's my only other complaint.
The warm up that we couldn't see because we were busy wandering, trying to find.
Yeah, just trying to find our
some sort of
access
point.
Go through all of my issues of not being able to record the major incidents of the day.
You can bring it up if you want. I was going to try to be nice and let you off the hook, but
well, here's how my day went. So
I was wild.
Yeah. So we would have seen the Jimmy Johnson crash, but we could not find the grandstand. So missed that warm up. Then in the super trucks, one of these trucks just like locked up, came flying, smacked into the back of another one. Missed that because my phone overheated. And then this guy kept, honestly, the funniest part of the day, this one guy just locked up, could not make turn nine to save his life. Every single lap, he overshot the corner and locked up. And like, he was trying to break from further back each time, but he was just locking up for longer. But then the one time I filmed it, he made the corner.
Of course.
And then in the supercar one, the one where the guy came flying in backwards, I thought I was recording, but I didn't hit the record button. And then for the Herta one, my gimbal went wild. So,
well, you got a great shot of the sun. So it was a perfect angle there.
I did kind of enjoy like half seeing my face going wild.
She was getting all fancy. The whole race, she's over there flipping it one way or the other, talking shit over there. And then it bit her, you know?
I got bit by a lot of things this week.
And then we had the Alfred Hitchcock presents Nashville Birds on the way
Apocalypse.
Back.
Yeah.
Oh, somebody told me what the birds were. Hold on.
Yeah, okay. Please explain to me.
Please explain
the birds.
Is this
a thing that happens normally? Because it scared the living shit out of me.
Somebody commented on my video. Hold on, let me find it.
Yeah, if you're not sure what I'm talking about, definitely go check out Deanna's.
She's got two.
We're walking out. You know, of the finally of the facilities, we're going back over the main pedestrian bridge to get us back into the kind of the downtown area there. I think it empties right out. I think that's Broadway. Correct me if I'm wrong. Right there by
the
arena and everything else is right there. And there's
bird poop everywhere.
Literally thousands upon thousands of birds, and they're just swarming, just back and forth. And yeah, probably one of the scariest moments of my life. The fact that we didn't get shitted on was a complete miracle.
Apparently, it is the Purple Martin Migration. They stop at the Symphony Center every year.
Why?
So they were getting freaky.
Yes.
All right. There's an image for you.
Well, I was just not having any of that. So at least it wasn't
there's your capstone to the night. A bird orgy.
That's pretty much what we saw, yeah. See, this is the one of the few times in life where it's not a bad thing to be vertically challenged, because James is much taller than me, and I kind of used him as a human shield to try to avoid any kind of lingering shit that was flying through the air. But the smell, not great. I would avoid that part of town if you can. you know, just not the best area to be in after a race. It was a little freaky. You know, it's sunset, you've got a gazillion birds flying around, you've got shit flying everywhere. It was just a sight that I'll never get back in. But yeah, anyways, so that was Nashville.
But I mean, and then you actually see Broadway, and it reminds me very much of like a Southern Vegas. I mean, I think that's at least because it was that warm and that humid and the air just was so heavy. That's what it kind of reminded me of. But it's definitely got a nightlife if you're so inclined. I think we were all just gassed enough to just kind of wanted to go at that point after being out in the sun all day long. So unfortunately there was no big shot of us, you know, getting hammered or anything like that.
The sun took care of that on
tended to our wounds. Basically you couldn't, if you got drunk at this race, I have a total respect for your drinking ability, because I think people were trying and they couldn't do it. So
I think I lost half my body weight in water.
Yeah. So Andy, you mentioned like the lack of ability to get water. I think, again, the only way to get it was to pay for it. And right. I don't remember how much it was, but it wasn't, you know, cheap by any stretch.
It wasn't cheap.
I think I probably spent $100 on just water bottles that weekend.
Well, I mean, it becomes a safety concern because we had the older lady in front of us.
I was going to say there was
someone that was had to be escorted out. Yeah. Looks like some kind of heat stroke situation.
So that's definitely a major.
I know it's a weird situation with COVID. It's like the water fountains aren't really probably a thing that people want to do right now, but it might be just something that as an organization, they might just say, hey, we need to get a shit ton of water bottles and just start handing them out just for the safety of people. And, we'll spend our money elsewhere. And
I mean, I did see cooling stations. I did see first aid, and I will be a testament to the track workers who came. They were on their radios and they attended to her like right away. So I don't even know how that got reported, but they were on their microphones and talking to EMTs. I think they were trained EMTs that came out. So, I mean, hopefully she was all right. I mean, it's just a sad part to watch anybody who, you know, wants to come out and can't finish the event.
Yeah. But yeah, as a whole, it was definitely an entertaining event.
It was an entertaining event. I mean, Deanna didn't get a chance to see the golf thing between. You probably saw it on Twitter. My golf game needs help. Basically, my conclusion after that. That course totally kicked my rear end. So I'm now new humbled, and I will go back to work in the driving range and try to come back next time we do this and probably put up a hopefully better number than the number that I put up.
James only beat you by 23 strokes. It could have been worse, but I had a good time. Those of you that know me, I've got a giant plate in my shoulder, so golf is not a thing for me. But I had a good time drinking beer and driving a golf cart and doing some burnouts and brakes.
We both did some burnouts and squealed some brakes.
I'm kind of surprised if they were ever welcome back at that course. Because, you know, 3 minutes after we get our carts, Andy does a, you know, brake lockup all the way down a hill in front of the
courthouse. Oh, it was Lance Stroll, eat your heart out. You got nothing on me when I'm freewheeling a golf cart.
It was a glorious sight. But yeah, hopefully Twitter had a good time with that. I enjoyed filming it and making fun of you guys in the process. It brought joy to my soul, that and the alcohol. But yeah, that's Nashville. Looking forward to doing it again. So, we're going to St. Louis. I don't know if we're going to play on top of this yet, but St. Louis in what, like
a week and a half?
Yeah. 7 days, something like that. I think I'll be heading up that way. 8 days, something like that. So obviously very different course, short track, but
this will be my first oval. I've never been to an oval, other than like a short track or a dirt oval. So this will be interesting to watch high class cars going around really, really quickly.
Well,
in a confined space.
Well, before this weekend, I'd only ever been to a Formula E race, so these were much louder, I can say.
Yeah.
Safely.
Yeah, and St. Louis will probably be significantly louder than even Nashville.
Yeah, this will reverberate, and you won't get you won't get the break like we got. I mean, we were fortunate because actually with all the cautions, it kept all the cars bunched together, so you never really got to that road course part of there's always a car, even if it's not the leader, going by you.
Yeah.
So there were good chances to hear like the on-track commentary and watch the thing on the Jumbotron and then get ready for when they were coming at you. That's always one of the things. By the time like the F1 race at Circuit of the Americas ends, it's usually so spread out that there's always a car going by you at some point. So unless you've got, you know, your own independent audio, it's really hard to follow. necessarily what's going on. So, I mean, that's kind of a track tip. So if you can, the IndyCar app actually did a really good job. It was just my earbuds died because I forgot to charge them that morning. So that's on me and not on them. But their commentary is actually very good.
Yeah. St. Louis will be fun to see this the cars there. Obviously, I grew up on ovals being in the South. I've seen Indy cars or IRL at Charlotte. I've seen them obviously at Indy. So looking forward to seeing, you know, essentially 200 mile an hour short track racing, open wheel. Should be fun and pretty entertaining to see a night race, which will be cool. Unfortunately, not a lot of brake glowing with this one, but yeah, it'll be a very entertaining race. I plan on meeting up with the guys from the Formation Lab from ESPN up there. So we've been good friends with them for several years now. So looking forward to finally meeting them in person as well. And we should have a good time. Never been to St. Louis either. So we're checking off some boxes here this year. It's going to be one hell of a long road trip to get up there, but it's going to be 13 plus hours, something like that.
I was going to say,
but
you got the short end of that one this time.
Yeah.
I only got maybe a 5-hour drive this time. So
yeah, if I can avoid interstate shutdowns, I'll be fine. That's but you know.
Got a layover in Charlotte.
Oh, well, there you go. Mm-hmm. You know, welcome back to North Carolina.
Yeah.
Well, we'll figure out ways to get in and out, and we'll figure this one out, and we'll pick another one. I mean, this will be like my sixth. I've actually seen more, just about as much IndyCar as I have F1 Live, so that's actually pretty cool. So turning away from that and into a bit of news that actually broke, actually while we were all, I was in the car on the way back, the appeal of Sebastian Vettel to the stewards for the Hungarian Grand Prix has been officially denied. So he has been officially now disqualified. So all those points that we were subjected on, and we weren't sure was going to happen, that ends up happening. That's one of his avenues shut down. He has also continued to appeal, and asked Martin have appealed to the International Court of Appeals, but that is a much more lengthy process. This one would have, you know, had it worked, had they said, yeah, we found the extra fuel and we were able to somehow get it out, we were able, you know, they would have restored his points right away, but now it's got to go through appeal. Whether or not Aston Martin has the wants to continue to do that and spend all the money to do that is still kind of yet to be seen. But that was the bit of breaking news that happened literally on the drive home.
Yeah, and we talked about it. I mean, it seems like this one is going to be very cut and dry. You either have enough fuel or you don't. I know there was some chatter out there about a fuel pump issue, that perhaps there was more fuel in the motor that just couldn't retrieve. I feel like at this point, the fact that they shut this down before we even really got started tells me that there's not a whole lot of hope that there's more into that.
Well, they said it was his fuel tank broke or had some sort of crack.
They said the pump failed.
Yeah.
And the device that the FIA uses is reliant on that pump to then pump it up. But because it had failed, they couldn't extract it. So that's why they impounded it. That's also why we finally find out, you know, that's why it took the 5 hours that it did for them to finally rule, because I guess they were futzing with it for the 5 hours trying to get this fuel out, and then they just couldn't. So again, you know, if they can't get it out of the car for whatever reason, and I still think the car is still impounded. I don't know if they will now release it back to Aston Martin, but you know, you got to have a whole lot. The job gets that much tougher because you got to have a whole new slew of evidence. And if you couldn't do it on this appeal, ICAs don't like to overturn stuff of the stewards unless there's a big problem. So I don't see that happening either.
This just, it also feels like it's a very black and white rule. That's you got a leader or you don't. So I just don't see this one go anywhere.
Yeah. A lot of people were chatting on Twitter and our Discord, and, you know, yes, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't, you know, it's, you know, a driver makes his best drive in years now. And, you know, it takes away from, you know, the spirit of the sport. I get all that, but unfortunately, the rule has been in place for quite some time. It is very clear that you have to have this. You either do or you don't. You know, I know that there was some pre-race controversy with Seb, and people were thinking, oh, well, you know, they're penalizing him because of that. You know, whether the FIA needs to stick their nose in the pre-race stuff is a whole other story, which we, you know, won't get into right now. But unfortunately, you know, what happened pre-race and what happened with the fuel have no bearing on each other.
Yeah.
It could have been any driver, and it has been other drivers in the past. You know, as soon as it happened, like I said, Andy and I were texting immediately after the race about fuel, right on the, you know, within minutes after the race, people on our Discord were asking what happens if they can't get fuel out of the car, yada, yada. And right then we were like, most likely it's going to be a DQ. So it doesn't surprise us at all. It sucks. I get it. Especially if you're new fans, first time you've seen this happen. I know it just doesn't feel right, but unfortunately it's just one of those things that, it, you know, rules have to be put in place to prevent cheating and everything else, which happens from time to time. And this is just one of the rules that has had to be put in for various other, you know, situations that have happened. And yeah, it's very cut and dry. So the peel was probably a long shot at best. And if they couldn't get the fuel out, if there is any fuel in there, if they can't get it out now, but if that car gets released to them, I would say it's officially a game over at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you had some hope. If this had somehow gotten held up or they wanted to take a second look at it, you know, maybe then, you know, we've got some traction. Maybe they bring in a different pump or they can replace it, swap it out, do something. But, yeah, their task got a lot harder. But it's still, I mean, at least it makes that result kind of finalized, at least moving forward.
And at least I don't have to redo my agenda.
Yeah, for a sixth time.
About yeah, where the I'm not doing it. So, again, sorry, Seb. The agenda has been done. I'm not fixing it again.
I think, as John would say, the matter is closed.
Yes. let's move on to another chapter.
So another bit of news that broke, actually, again, while we were on the way home. Christian Lundgaard, who is in the Alpine Academy, will make his IndyCar debut. This weekend, actually, they are going to the Indy Road Course. So as a road course driver, he has been brought in. He will race for, I think, Ray Hall Lanigan Racing. And we'll get a chance
Letterman,
to see
Lanigan,
Letterman Lanigan. Yep. All of that.
I'm still learning all, sports. Yep. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. At least I got the first one right. It seems like Alpine's got to put these people somewhere, and I guess IndyCar is the benefactor of at least for this weekend.
Yeah, I think they have a couple better ones. They have Zao's show. Wow, I just messed that up. Piastri, at least. So I think there's a couple definitely way ahead of the line from him. And then they also have Alonso and Ocon. So I think the F1 route is probably done for him. So this is not a bad option. But it does seem like there is more interest from the European drivers as of late to move over to Indy. I know that there's been a lot of like silly season rumors about Albon maybe taking a look at an Indy seat. So yeah, good for him.
I think Indy, like, honestly, my entire life, Indy has always kind of been like the redheaded stepchild. I mean, it has, like, especially in the U.S., like, it's always been this other little thing. And then especially when it's split between CART and IRL, which is a big black eye, and NASCAR dominated, you know, the entire country from a TV rating standpoint. And in the last few years, that has absolutely changed to a phenomenal degree. I mean, obviously, we've got more and more former F1 drivers coming over. Top series drivers, some other, you know, competitions coming over and driving full time now. You've obviously got Jimmy Johnson, even though his on track performances have been great, but obviously it's a big name in the sport, a 7-time champion in NASCAR, coming over, bringing a lot of money with that, with his Carvana stuff. You know, so the whole vibe of IndyCar in the United States, it seems to be changing rapidly overnight, from being the redhead stepchild that no one gave a crap about, to now it appears to be heading on to becoming the dominant series in the United States, which is pretty damn cool. And hopefully Formula One will, the you know, kind of tag onto that, and then two will blossom together. But yeah, I mean, we haven't talked about the next story yet and kind of transition this, but as you know, the European focus goes into IndyCar, you know, with McLaren making a big announcement this week, obviously he's an Alpine driver. Is there any hope that like maybe Alpine says, hey, like, maybe we make some financial investment into IndyCar as well. And perhaps, you know, it was a couple of years ago, Ferrari was potentially looking at making fielding a team over there. I think it'd be cool as hell to see IndyCar with a bunch of McLarens, Ferraris and Alpines and everything else, but mixed in with Hondas and Chevys and Penske's and, you know, you name it. But
I mean, you would literally have a true, I mean, F1 is a true world championship, but I mean, this in terms of diversity and where all the drivers are from and everything, you would totally have a very valid world championship, I think, for IndyCar. And, you know, McLaren have kind of laid out the model as to how you can come in and, at least now, and come in probably the right way. They probably didn't do it right the first time. When we get to that story in just a second, we'll talk about what they're doing now. But I mean, the roadmap is kind of out there, and it's not cost prohibitive. I mean, that's the nice thing about IndyCar is, you know, with a more of a spec series, yeah, you destroy a front wing, you replace the front wing. It doesn't kill you. They're all relatively the same. I mean, hell, Jimmy Johnson had a front wing of his own and had Alex Palou's chassis for the race, for the four laps that he was in that thing. So, I mean, if that doesn't tell you that these parts are swappable out, I don't know what else does. But yeah, I would love to see Alpine have interest. I'd love to see Ferrari have interest. Can you imagine watching Ferrari and McLaren go at it on your Sunday morning in F1 and then watch part two of it at like 3:30 in the afternoon when they go at it like at the Indy road course or somewhere else? I mean, that'd be awesome. I mean, that'd be a great, great racing day for me.
Yeah, we always talk about, I think we were talking about even this weekend about, you know, we're surprised we don't see more teams have junior teams and maybe, and obviously cost is the biggest factor there. Obviously Formula One is significantly more expensive than IndyCar by miles comparison. So yeah, maybe the future is, you know, junior teams in IndyCar. You know, we've heard chatter about Red Bull and McLaren and Mercedes, and, you know, various teams have had to look into budget cuts and potential layoffs and things like that because of the cost cap that Formula One has now. They obviously want to maintain these people. They're great talent. They brought them in for a reason. Maybe this gives them that other opportunity now, that other avenue that they can maintain that personnel and they can maintain driver lineup and a junior academy and everything else and start to dedicate, because it's obviously a very competitive series. Yes, it's a spec series, but it's definitely a driver series as well. So, like Formula 2, like Formula 3, you know, the best drivers will rise to the top, generally speaking. So, again, I think it gives you another great opportunity to test out, you know, Christian Lundgaard, and let's see what he can do against some pretty heavy competition in IndyCar. So maybe that's the pathway going forward. But, yeah, pretty cool. Lundgaard's not having the best year in F2. I think he's sitting 12th in the standings right now. But he looked like he was having a damn good time at Barber Motorsports. So, I wish him the best of luck. Looking forward to seeing it on Sunday or Saturday, whichever day this race is this week.
I think this one is Saturday.
Okay.
All right. So the other big story that broke, it was announced actually before, I think it was while we were all wandering, was McLaren have now become the majority owner as of the end of this year of the Arrow McLaren SP. For those of you who didn't know what the SP means, that stands for Schmidt-Peterson. Who McLaren had bought, I think it was the minority stake in. Sam Schmidt was a former IndyCar driver who had lost both of his legs, but now he owns the team. He's been around the paddock for a long time. So this was probably the natural move once you kind of saw them take the minority share. Now they've taken the majority share. So, but they are going to keep the Arrow McLaren SP name. Arrow is obviously the title sponsor. McLaren, we all know that. And they're going to keep the SP. Sam Schmidt and I forget the guy's first name, but Peterson are going to be basically on the board of directors of the new now Arrow McLaren SP organization, and will be able to, you know, continue to have influence in the team. It's the knowledge base that McLaren was lacking when they thought that they could just come in and, you know, win the Indy 500 without, you know, doing conversions or, you know, reading things or getting the steering wheel right or all that other stuff. Yeah. You know, or doing all that other stuff. Making sure
painting
the car.
Painted.
Yeah. Was the right shade of papaya, which is cool, but be nice if you're going to actually qualify your car first. But yeah, I mean, it's, I think that whole fiasco has led them to this. And if they can show that it's a viable and they can make money off of it and it's a way to get good sponsorship, this is, like I said, you could see Alpine, maybe Ferrari, down the line, maybe have interest in IndyCar, which I think would be great for that series.
And you can just see, I mean, when you have somebody related to F1 come to Indy, that person gets a lot of attention. We saw a lot of people that are McLaren fan or Arrow McLaren SP, like Pato fans and all that kind of stuff. A lot of Grosjean fans, people, everybody cheering when he was in the lead of the race. So there's definitely a lot of support for people that come for F1, which I think is a kind of marketing boost for any other future team that wants to try to do something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. McLaren definitely got, you know, a kick in the lower regions, a bite of humble pie from the Indy experience a few years ago. But yeah, they fully learned from that. And yeah, and there's rumors that they'll be filling potentially a third car as well. So it just opens the door for all kinds of avenues from a driver standpoint. I'm not a huge fan of the livery that they ran this last week.
Yeah, I mean, they could.
The tiger stripe looking deals. Yeah. You know, let's get back to the black and orange would be perfectly fine with me. Or who knows? Maybe we get, can we get some, you know, I don't know. Maybe go back to like old school, just chrome it out, you know, of the F1 days of old. That'd be badass. But anyways, yeah, I think it hopefully is opening the door for bigger and better things. So I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So we did get a bit of F1 calendar news. We haven't seen any new shakeups with the 2021 calendar yet, which I think is a good thing. But we'll keep our eyes out for that. But we do kind of know now where the Miami Grand Prix is going to slot in the provisional calendar next year. Looks like it's going to be an early May date. So it won't be in mid-August. So no summer break, no super hot sun. Yeah, it'll still be warm. I'm predicting, well, I don't know if Miami ever gets cold. Maybe in December is maybe the only time that might happen. But early May date for the Miami Grand Prix, and then it looks like it will coincide, I would assume, with Canada's, where they would kind of want to piggyback it. So maybe we get a shake-up a little bit in the early part of the European season next year.
That would be nice, instead of like a... like my, because you got to think it's probably around Spain, Monaco time, and you throw in Miami. I don't think that's maybe going to be the best three race streak. So maybe if we could throw Canada in there, that might make it a little bit better.
I mean, my only hope here is that obviously we will have, because I agree with you, the Miami track doesn't appear to be the greatest in the world from an overtaking perspective, but that is using the 2021 cars in my mind when I'm thinking about this. Hopefully, knock on wood, fingers crossed, lucky charm, whatever you got out there, that 2022 solves a lot of these overtaking issues. And that might actually turn Miami and Spain, for that matter, into decent tracks. So there's always a chance, right? Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure like the event of Miami will be probably to the nines and should be actually really fun. I just don't know what the on product. I'm with you on that. I have no idea what the on product is going
to. Honestly, feel like we might see something similar to Nashville.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think
it might be the same kind of vibe at the actual race, on track racing. Probably not that many cautions or anything as chaotic as that, but kind of the track itself being not the best for racing and just kind of, I think overall it's going to be a somewhat similar experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause if you look at Nashville as a track map, it doesn't appear to be maybe the best track map in the world either, but you know, it definitely put on a show. It sucks though that, you know, originally the Miami GP was supposed to feature the bridges in Miami, with the long stretch over to the harbor and then do a nice like 180 back, which is basically exactly what we saw in Nashville.
Yeah.
Would have made for at least some glorious TV shots and skyline shots.
Love the bridge.
But unfortunately not going to happen. But yeah, the sim stuff that I've seen of Miami, there's a lot of swooping turns that don't exactly appear to invite overtaking in any stretch of the imagination. So hopefully, yeah, 2022 cars.
Yeah, you don't get those good hard either 90 degree or you know, U-shaped type overtaking zones or anything like that where you can clearly see a dive bomb move maybe being successful. Somebody's going to really have to push to really overtake, and it probably feels like a Hungary. But it is Florida. And there is always the chance of rain, even in May. So that could be the great equalizer. It is a daily
occurrence. Oh, yeah.
Depending on the time of the day.
But they are apparently somehow doing some good marketing already, because I was at dinner with a friend who does not have any involvement in racing at all. And one of her friends wants to go take her bachelorette party or something to Miami, to the race in Miami. And they're talking about it. And so, like, these are people that are not into F1 at all. And they know about this race. They're talking about this race, which is just, that floored my mind. Like, I just couldn't believe that she was bringing this up.
Welcome to the Twilight Zone.
You know, That could be so one hell of a weekend. I mean, that's I don't ask me what the hell goes on at a bachelorette party. I have no clue. But
it's probably not
mix
F1.
That in with an F1 weekend. Yeah. I guess. Normally on
the list. I think they're thinking this is about to be some like glamorous thing. I don't know if they really know what to expect, but I was just surprised that they even knew what like that these people were talking about it. But anyway,
well, hey,
and also you know, yeah, but I think just kind of in general. A lot of these different series have been doing some really great marketing in recent years. And even like the Formula E race, I mean, I had friends in Brooklyn, know nothing about racing, knew all about this race that was happening. So it's just been really cool where I have not brought it up. A lot of my friends or like more casual friends don't even know how into F1 and kind of racing in general that I am. And they'll bring it up and talk about it and always just kind of catches me off guard. So it's definitely something that is quickly coming towards the forefront where I think it's kind of like, racing was always this kind of more niche thing and nobody really kind of knew about it. And I think in recent years, it's just as a whole has been picking up in popularity quickly.
Yeah. Racing.
And you've seen it in the TV ratings and you saw it. And I think the ratings came out for Nashville and, you know, we talked about it earlier, second highest IndyCar rated on cable, I think of all time.
Yeah.
It's this strike while the iron is hot type of thing, and good on the Miami people. I mean, I know my Facebook feed is full of it, but I figured that's because Facebook, that algorithm has figured out what I'm into. So I get it, but it's great to see that it's working. It's great to see that.
To go from like where I was in childhood, where if you didn't come from the Southeast United States, you either knew nothing about racing or definitely wasn't into racing, except for some random sprinkles out there like Andy. To see it now, to see random people talking about bachelorette parties and, you know, random coworkers that are like, oh yeah, I caught this race or that race. And yeah, it's pretty incredible to just kind of see where the U.S. has gone and the transformation and really what feels like the last 3 to 4 years, honestly. So I'm not complaining.
No, not at all.
Bring it on. So.
So that kind of brings us to the end of our agenda. We are going to gear up. We're going to turn around and do this again. We will be invading St. Louis, as we talked about earlier. So it'd be nice to hook up with the Outlap or the Formation Lap people and see what's going on down there. Should be a fun race. We will recap it. We will obviously continue to watch for any F1 breaking news or anything like that. Stay tuned to our Twitter at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can also check out our website for all your F1 news and needs. So for Deanna, for John, for James, who's hopefully catching up on some rest because he had and kudos and just a quick shout out to James and his family for hosting John and I over the course of the weekend.
Yes, we appreciate that. Great hospitality.
That was an awesome move. And for James for driving my ass all over the place. So thank you very much. We will catch you all in the next time. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support and we'll see you on the next one.
Support for the Outlap F1 Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Big news, everyone. Manscaped has just released their new cologne scent to help you feel good and smell good all over and all the time. Manscaped has been trusted by over 2 million men worldwide, so join the movement now for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. We already know that Manscaped has the perfect package 3.0 for all your grooming needs, but they didn't stop there. Complete your grooming game with a new refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped. The same signature scent that's in all the Manscaped formulas, this cologne is a perfect complement to your collection. It's light, approachable, and gentlemanly-like in all the right ways. Think of it as your roommate for the night on the town to keep you fresh and ready for anything. It's calming and inviting. This signature scent introduces a light citrus burst before settling in for an incredible woodsy and masculine finish. This 50 milliliter spray cologne is even hypoallergenic, cruelty-free, dye-free, paraben-free, and 100% vegan. It even comes in a beautifully designed glass bottle that makes a statement, and the manly scent sets the mood for any occasion. I've been personally using this product for about a month though, and let me tell you, it smells incredible, and my significant other has certainly been enjoying it as well. Right now, our listeners of the Outlap F1 podcast can get 20% off plus free shipping by using the code OUTLAP, that's OUTLAP, one word, at manscaped.com. 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com.